Final hour, Darren McFarland, Derek Mason here in our Hillside Medical Game Studios. Willie Donick in Ottawa, Predators and Senators. Tonight, 6 o'clock puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you at 5 o'clock. Willie and his crew over on the TV side will have their coverage starting at 5:30. Big win over Minnesota, Elliott, on Tuesday night here. Ottawa tonight on the road, and then Florida here on Saturday at Pittsburgh on Sunday. Huge week for the Preds.
Very big week. You know, I wondered if you guys were starting to get a little nervous, like, you know, about the way this was going. You know, Dallas has made this a little too interesting, I think, for them. I think even L.A. has gotten a little bit nervous about what their situation is. I saw what happened with some of your results. Like, you know, in Vegas with their run of 5 in a row, I think they were making everybody nervous. But they suffered a tough one last night. That was a rough one for them. But we need a playoff race, and thank you for entertaining us for at least a couple of weeks.
No doubt about it. The West is definitely providing a race for sure. I've been saying it for weeks. I think this thing is coming down to the final week. Who knows? It may come down to the final game or two. I mean, it may be that close. Last Friday, after we talked to you last week, the Predators were in Buffalo. It was Rick Jeanneret night, 51 years as the voice, and they lost to the Sabres. The Sabres are not going to the playoffs for now 11 years in a row. They sold out the barn that night, first sellout in a couple of years. You know that, I mean, that market and, you know, that dynamic, they love their Sabres hockey, but man, 11 years, it's hard to believe they've missed the playoffs that long.
I know, it's just brutal, really. It's not something, guys, on any level that is really acceptable. You could miss the playoffs that many years and think that would be, you know, I think now they might. The Eichel trade could have been a disaster for them. The thing that they really did was they identified Alex Tuch, who's a Buffalo area guy, and said, we have to get a veteran here who wants to be here. And he's looked really good for them. And it's really, like, that one move in itself, getting a local guy who's a veteran, who's excited to be a Sabre, it kind of rejuvenated them a bit. And they've won some big games. Anderson's been very good in goal for them. They're starting to give their fans a little bit of hope. But that night, they haven't had too many sellouts. And the best advertisement is playing hard and winning. And Buffalo has had too many of those nights over the last few years. That was a huge night. Expectations next year, but it's a great market with great fans. They deserve a lot better than they have.
What a comeback for Florida. They're no strangers to comebacks this year. They got down 5-1 to the Leafs, came back and won 7-6 in OT. I'm okay with the Preds jumping out to a 5-1 lead on Saturday against the Panthers, but just be careful because they're the comeback cats.
They are, and the thing is, though, it's so funny. Like, you know, I live in Toronto. I've lived here almost all my life. It's such a hilarious city. Like, Toronto just went through a situation where, you know, they won. I think they got 11 to 12 points against some really good teams. But when you have a result like that, it's mass panic here. Like, everybody just looks at the most negative scenario. And so, like, I was on one of our local radio stations today, and they're saying, like, is it positive? Like, you know, do we look at this game as a great game, or do we look at this entertaining game, or do we look at this game as a devastating loss? And in Toronto, I said it's our birthright. We have to look at it as a devastating loss. That's just the way we are. And the people I was on the air with, they were laughing their heads off. I think the thing about this is that, like, I think Florida's a really fun team to watch. They have so much talent. They're like Toronto. They've got so much talent. I don't know if you can win that way in the playoffs, but I don't mind watching to see if we can find out the answer. I think this year's playoffs have such a chance to be spectacular in both conferences, but I think particularly the East, where it's been completely wide open, and there's no great team. Like, I am so excited for this year because I think it's as wide open as I can remember it. I think Colorado's pretty dominant. I think Calgary's very good. But after that, I mean, who do you look at there and say, that's a guaranteed win? There really aren't anybody, and that's the way it should be.
Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, I think a lot about what you guys have discussed from the general manager's meetings. The numbers came out. I think we were sort of aware, but they're sort of eye-popping when you put them in front of everybody. Most goals scored in the last 25 years, so much of it being at even strength. And, you know, the Predators pride themselves on being, you know, a team that's hard to play against and tough and can lock down defensively. But they're in the same boat as a lot of teams in their own world. They're scoring more than they've ever scored in a lot of areas, but they're having trouble stopping people, just like a lot of teams too. So it's really a league-wide thing, and don't you think, like you just sort of hit on it, from an entertainment standpoint, people have to love this.
Oh, I love it. I have a joke, like hockey is better when nobody plays defense, right? And,
right.
We're in that right now, and like we're at a point right now where the average goals against average, I think, is 2.89. That's the highest it's been in 16 years. And the thing about that is that that time it was so high, which was 2005-06, teams were getting 6 power plays a game. Now they're getting 3. And we can argue whether or not that's good or bad. Everybody's got their own different opinions. But I really think that if you want to win the Stanley Cup, like if you really think you're going to win the Stanley Cup, you can't depend on the power play. You've got to be good at even strength. And you look at it this year, Austin Matthews, in the last 16 years, we've had 260-goal scorers. We've only had one. Austin Matthews is 54. We've only had one year where there have been 5 50-goal scorers, and we've got a shot at 5 this year. We've got Roman Josi could have the best point season for a defenseman in 30 years. And I think he's on pace for the 15th highest total by a defenseman ever. You know, Jonathan Huberdeau, there's been one player in the last, I think, 25 years that's got 90 assists, and he's got a shot at it. And Johnny Goodrow has a shot from Calgary, has a shot at 95 even strength points, which would be tied for the 15th most ever and the most in, I think, 30 years. So, like, we are looking, and offense sells. Like, you know, Derek, you played in the NFL, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know that they changed all the rules to make it easier on wide receivers, like, you know, and quarterbacks. They wanted to sell offense. And sometimes we're a little bit behind in that in hockey, but this year it's the offense. And I hope this isn't a blip. I hope this is a permanent thing because offense sells.
It is exciting. Elliot, there was an interesting back and forth. We're up here in Ottawa, so we're studying the Senators here. Tim Stützle, really good, talented up-and-comer. He got chirped at a little bit in the press conference from Brendan Gallagher from Montreal about embellishment. And it seems to me, I hear Chris Mason talk about this a lot on our broadcast, Elliot, about players that are getting good. And I think Stützle would probably fit this. There's a fine line of just being a flat-out diver that everybody can see and just being really skilled at being hooked a little bit, tripped a little bit, and knowing how to sell it and make it look good, like a Hollywood actor. Like I equate it to people who are good at drawing charges in basketball. You know, you draw the charge without getting called for the flop, so to speak. So are you seeing that a lot? I think players are just getting good at this.
Well, I think they are, but I think there's a real hatred of it from a lot of people. Like, the worst thing you can be called in hockey is soft. Like, earlier this year, Sheldon Keefe, the coach of the Maple Leafs, he used the word soft, and that's, like, the worst insult you can be called in hockey is soft. But I think the second worst might be a diver or a faker, and there's a real dislike for that. And the other thing that happens is, you gain a reputation and referees stop making calls. on you. And so, you know, when Gallagher did that the other day, that's like the worst, the second worst thing I think really in hockey you can say about somebody, is that you're a faker or a diver. Now, Stutzle may not be playing tonight, right?
And correct. So game time decision.
It's, yeah, so like we'll see how that all works out, and we'll see where that goes. But like a hardcore guy like DJ Smith, who's the coach of the Senators, he would want to protect his player from that. He would want to step, like, now if he in any way, if he agreed, he would never say that publicly, but he would go to his player privately and he would say, Tim, like, you know, like, that's not the reputation you want to get. But publicly, I think he would do whatever he could to protect his player. And like, we'll see what happens tonight. I don't question injuries. I've learned that's a dumb thing to do. But I could see Ottawa definitely trying to send a message out there, like, we think it's unfair that our player is getting that reputation, and doing what they can to say, we're going to protect our player from that reputation.
Now, Elliot, how do you see this thing ultimately playing out amongst the last few playoff spots between the Predators, Stars, and the Knights? Do you think it will just be a continual jockeying of positions until the end?
Derek, do you think I'm going on a national radio show and saying the Predators aren't going to make the playoffs? Is that what you really think?
Not in this market, probably not.
Well, I think you guys are going to be okay. I do. I just think, like, the team that actually worried me for a little bit, guys, was L.A. because they're running out of bodies. Like, they've got some pretty significant injuries, and I think they've been really good this year and really impressed, but I was starting to worry for them that the injuries might pile up so much that they might get caught. But, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I think you guys are going to be fine. I just think that, you know, with Saros, I like Frauds. I really do. Dallas, that's the team I can't figure out. Like, I think they're so talented, and I think they can play so many different ways. But the math is so good for them. Like, they have the best math. They had a big win the other night against the Islanders. They just keep letting teams hang around. They've lost a lot more games in regulation than I would have expected, and it's kind of surprised me. Like, Vegas won 5 in a row. They lost that one last night. That was a tough, tough defeat. The math just isn't good for them. If anyone runs out of runway, unfortunately for them, I think it's going to be Vegas.
It'll be interesting. Elliot, thank you so much for this. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll do it next Thursday.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet. You do the same. Hockey Night in Canada, 32 Thoughts. Stars hosting the Leafs tonight. More big games on tap. Edmonton and L.A.? That should be a good one. We'll get a report from Ottawa. When we come back, we'll talk about this Predators matchup against the Senators tonight. But first, a word about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. Home values way up, and so take advantage of that. As we've been talking about for a long time in regards to Loan Pronto, how great would it be to wipe out credit card payments? If you've got some that have been lingering and interest is building up and you're thinking, man, how do I get ahead of this thing? Or any other high interest loan you might have. Imagine your monthly cash flow without those payments. That's what Loan Pronto wants you to know. You can do this with Loan Pronto's debt consolidation refi. Loan Pronto has got a great program. They can help you use the equity in your home to your advantage. It's a smart financial move. Home values are up. Inflation has been great for your home. So you can refinance your mortgage now, take money out to pay off the credit card debt or any other debts you might have that have some high interest, and then you'll be set to go, and you'll have a lower monthly budget. You got to love that. For an example, one couple had $50,000 in credit card debt plus personal loans. So Loan Pronto did a debt consolidation refi, and even though their mortgage rate went up a tad, they cut their monthly payments by $900 a month, so you come out ahead. So why pay 20% interest when you can consolidate it to one low payment with a mortgage APR in the threes? Call Loan Pronto and learn more about it. You can even skip your next house payment. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
This is why you listen to the show, because you just never know. You never know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Caller 7. Caller 7. Go. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Lucky caller 7 will win tickets to see the Preds and the Sharks next Tuesday at Bridgestone Arena. Hello.
Baby shark, shark, sharks.
Hello.
Oh, no, don't get that song in my head, teammates.
Hello. Yeah, why did you do that?
Oh, no.
Hey, man, it was only fitting. He said the Sharks.
It's funny you mentioned that song, because every time the Preds and Sharks play, we do the highlights at the very end of the broadcast where every goal, all the big plays, and usually we get to pick the song that plays as the bed underneath those highlights, and every time we play the Sharks, it's always the Baby Shark instrumental.
See? There you go.
Hold on, Elijah. Just hold on a second. Hold on. One more. Okay. We're on a little bit of a delay, so you always know when everybody's hearing it, because it just
lines are blowing up.
Phone lines blowing up. Good luck.
Here we go.
All right, what you got for us from Ottawa?
Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Well, a big theme from the other day was the shakeup and putting Phil Tomasino on the first line with Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg, and it seemed to work well. It was not at all that the first line wasn't playing well. It was that you just have to try to figure out a way to get the most out of the first two lines. And we know for several weeks, the second line, especially just at 5-on-5, those guys weren't contributing a whole lot. And as John Hines has pointed out, it's not just lack of points. Lack of points is one thing, but it's more, are you putting pressure on the other team? Are you getting chances? Are you driving play when you're on the ice? And unfortunately for Ellie Tolvanen, Luke Cunnan, and Mikhail Granlund, it has not been the case. So they made the adjustment, and I thought they got some good stuff out of it the other day. Of course, it was really the power play that generated the most part of the offense, the three power play goals, and those guys will all stay intact. That first five is not going anywhere. In fact, Roman Josi was on both power play units. They're just keeping him out there as long as he can stand it, because he's been so incredibly productive on the power play. So that's not going to change. The question tonight will be, do you, after sitting Ellie Tolvanen, bring him back in there? And if so, what role? And in the past, when he sat Ellie Tolvanen, it hasn't been for a long stretch. He gets him back in there, and Tolvanen responds. So I don't know if that's in the cards tonight, but if it is, I think it'll be really curious to see what role he is in, and do you stick with it? The other thing that I think is interesting is, we talked about this, Darren, that, you know, would Buffalo be a game where you'd see David Rittich? Would Ottawa be a game that you see David Rittich? And I think the answer is, I mean, we know the answer was on Friday, and I think you're going to see Juuse Saros again tonight. He was in the starter's crease this morning, for the morning skate. So I think it's just, for better or worse, we got to have Juuse Saros in there. And he was razor sharp the other night. You could argue that that game is completely different against the Wild, as well as the Predators played. If they don't get big saves from him, then that game could have been one of those shootouts that ends up 5-5, like you were talking about with Elliott in the Toronto-Florida game, where it ends up, you know, who has the puck last kind of thing. So this will be something to watch for tonight. I think Juuse Saros will get it, and then you've got the back-to-backs. I would have to think that David Rittich gets one of the two Saturday or Sunday.
I think anytime we talk about the goalie situation or Juuse Saros, we should have that sponsored by Kentucky Downs. Just ride that horse. Ride that horse.
Yeah.
Ride it till you can't. Yeah. Might as well.
Right?
You are in – these games moving toward the end are critical games. And just like any other sport, when you come down to that last point, whether it be the last, you know, 2 weeks of a season, and you're battling for position in the playoffs, you want your big guns playing. You want them out there.
Yep.
You know? So, hey, ride them as long as you can.
Here's another storyline tonight that I think will be fun. Mark Borowiecki, remember, not only played for the Ottawa Senators for 10 years, But he grew up in Ottawa. He's from Ottawa. So this will be the first time he's played ever against the Ottawa Senators.
Crazy.
And, of course, it's been a couple years. And I have to ask him. I'm actually going to talk to him tonight on the bench, our bench interview for our pregame
he's
show.
He's being benched?
No, it'll be taking place on the bench during warm-ups. Let me clarify. Yeah, he'll be in there. But I think he's going to get a really huge response from the crowd tonight. Now, there is no ceremony tonight. You'll be relieved to know back home because, you know, juiced up buildings on the road have definitely played a part here in some of the recent road games. Philadelphia and Buffalo had not seen atmospheres like you saw in games where they beat the Predators, you know, for different reasons, honoring, you know, special guests, Claude Giroux and then Rick Jeanneret the other night. It was really special atmospheres. You won't see that tonight. And Ottawa, you know, can struggle in attendance overall. They've got issues. They want a new arena. The arena is not in a great location here in terms of making it easy for fans to get to. And the team is obviously out of it, although they've won three in a row. Since the Predators beat them, they beat Detroit twice and then Montreal, and they've scored a ton of goals. So they are dangerous, no question about it. But I don't think you're going to see that electrifying atmosphere. But I do think they're going to really be happy, and they're going to do a nice salute to Mark Borowiecki tonight.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Dustin Lanier. Dustin was lucky caller 7. Go enjoy that Preds Sharks game next Tuesday. We'll get you a Masters leaderboard when we come back. And also, Mike Mularkey and the Titans once again in the same story. I don't know if it's a good one or not. We'll talk about that on the other side as well. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Don't forget to stop by Social Furniture at 5412 Charlotte Avenue in Nashville. You can play the music, the nice, soothing Masters music underneath this. You can go there and enter a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds and Blackhawks at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, April 16th. Also, friends, don't forget to check out the new sofas while they're there. You must be 18 years of age or older to enter this contest. Remember, friends, no purchase necessary. Let's check our Masters scoreboard down in Augusta, Georgia. Cameron Smith is atop the leaderboard at -3. He's through 12. Sungjae Im, I guess is how you say his name, -3. He's just through 4 holes, though, friends. I remember last year I called him, I said his last name one way, but I realized it wasn't. It was another way. Let's go with Jason Kokrak and not another name. -2 through 14. Danny Willett, as Elijah said during the break, as opposed to Danny Won't It. No, this is Willett. He's -2 through 14. Niemann and Scheffler are 2 under as well. And don't forget Schwartzel. He's -2 through 7. And there you go, folks. Friends, that's your Masters scoreboard update. In Major League Baseball, it's underway.
Happy opening day.
Hey,
happy opening day, everybody.
Braves and Cubs. Hey, no score through 1.
How's the weather?
Corbin Burns. Probably, my guess, cold and windy. At Wrigley.
Just a guess.
Just a hunch. Right?
Just a wild stab at what Wrigley Field might look like today.
Brew Crew. Hey! Brew Crew and Cubs. No score. Bottom of the first.
Boom.
I said through first. No score through one. Just 1 out. So there you go. The official Major League Baseball season is underway.
Boom.
Next game up will be the Guardians and Royals. Guardians and Royals. They have first pitch in about an hour and a half. Derek, there is a story concerning Mike Mularkey and the Titans.
Yes, there was a podcast that Mike Mularkey was on in 2020. And this podcast has recently been emailed. And Mina Kimes.
Or as they say, resurfaced.
Resurfaced. And Mina Kimes, she tweeted it out. Now, here's the gist of the podcast. And I'm sure the brass over there with the Titans is not going to like this. And it says, I've always prided myself on doing the right thing in this business. And I can't say that's true about everybody in this business, Mularkey said on the podcast. It's a very cutthroat business, and a lot of guys will tell you that. I allowed myself at one point when I was in Tennessee to get caught up in something I regret, and I still regret it. But the ownership there, Amy Adams Strunk and her family, came in and told me I was going to be the head coach in 2016 before they went through the Rooney Rule. And so I sat there knowing I was the head coach in 16 as they went through this fake hiring process. Knowing a lot of the coaches they were interviewing, knowing how much they prepared to go through those interviews, knowing that everything they could do and they had not, and they didn't have a chance at getting a job. Actually, the GM, John Robinson, he was in on the interview with me. He had no idea why he was interviewing me, that I had the job already. I regret. I'm sorry I did that. It was not the way to go about it. That was from Mike Mularkey.
Now, so Ray Horton. This is in lieu of the story today, the hit today, that Steve Wilks and Ray Horton have joined the Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL. Of course, against the hiring practices. Or,
yeah,
you know, that we know the story, the whole story that played out in Miami, alleging racism and hiring. And, of course, this resurfaced with that story coming out today. Now, let me say this. I don't believe Mike Mularkey regrets it. What does he regret? What I ask both of you this, in all seriousness. Like, we all want things to be better. We all want everybody to have a fair shake. We all want if this needs a tune-up, it needs to be better, even though they put a rule in there, the Rooney Rule, to make it better. But I guess a lot of people, obviously, like Brian Flores, said it's a sham. Mike Mularkey is basically saying the same thing because he's saying, look, I wasn't interviewing. I was already told I was going to get the job. But are you expect me to believe that Mike Mularkey regrets it? Like, he didn't want another bite of that head coaching apple? Give me a break.
I think
give me a break.
I think he did, but two things can be possible.
You think if it played out differently here, that would have been said in that interview, podcast, whatever? Remember, he won a playoff game and still got shown the door.
But it doesn't make his podcast, what he said on a podcast, any less valid.
Look, all I'm saying, Derek, is how would you fault somebody, anybody, pick any profession? You expect them to feel bad if they're given a job?
I don't think you
How would. Do you expect somebody to feel bad? Like, it's not up to them to make the place of employment better at that process. If somebody's giving you a job in which you are in search of, you're supposed to feel bad? You regret it? Come on, man.
I think it's this way because it happens with players as well. Especially rookies that come in or second-year players that are there, and they see this veteran guy. And the veteran guy has been good, and he's done everything that you would want him to do, but yet and still he still gets cut. And he gets cut because you are next in line, and they believe in you as the player. I've been through that. I understand. I felt bad, but it happened. It's not my decision. You know, I didn't. You know, they chose to do it, and
you're not going to stand up and say, guys, are you being fair to him?
Exactly. It happened. It was this way. When I got here, Mel Gray was here, and I idolized Mel Gray because he was in Detroit, and I watched him punt returner, kickoff returner, running back, whatever. And it was like, man, if I'm returning punts, kickoff, I want to be Mel Gray. Got here, Mel Gray was here. Still looked up to him. They cut him. I felt bad. But there's nothing I can do. You know, you just go in there and you try to do the best you can and make them, you know, you want them to feel that they don't regret giving you an opportunity to be in that position now. I think the same thing with Mike Mularkey. He wanted the head coaching job.
Of course.
But he did feel bad that, why are y'all even bringing in guys now if y'all going to hire me? But I can't say anything.
It just feels scorned a little bit. This feels like a bad breakup story.
I get it, but you can still feel bad and take the job. You can.
I'm just saying, if it didn't end the way it did, does he say that in an interview?
Well, if he's still a coach, he doesn't. But if he just went and got another job somewhere else.
But don't you think?
I think it still
comes
out.
There are a lot of coaches that will appreciate his honesty with the situation. You know, he was, if I remember correctly, right, he was the interim coach. He had taken over for Wisenhunt. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens is they say, look, you're going to get the job, but we have to go through the Rooney Rule. And so that's another thing about just the Rooney Rule is if you have an interim coach who is your head coach, should you have to open up the process? Why didn't they just name him the coach? If they knew he was going to be the coach, why are they conducting interviews?
Well, because
did they feel like they had to do it?
Well, Willie, in most most job situations, if they're in that, they have to open, you know, I guess make the opening
public. Even for
the
interim coach who's been doing the job for months?
In a lot of cases, yes. Because I've asked the same question.
Obviously,
like, why are you making this public?
That's a messed up system.
Agreed, but it goes on. Just so you know, this goes on in workplaces all across the country. It's not just a sports thing.
Yes.
This goes on in jobs all over. Like, they're sham interviews. Mm-hmm. You have no chance. They already know who they're hiring. Like, they've already, it's the person who we're talking about. Well, it's the person in place already. Mm-hmm. But they had to make it public, and so now they have to interview people for a job, for an opening that really doesn't exist, but they had to for HR purposes.
Right.
So the Rooney Rule.
Within that regard, Ray Horton, I think, has every right to let's bring this to the attention, because I'll bet you that there's dozens of other times that has happened with similar circumstances.
Oh, I bet it's more than dozens.
Exactly.
Probably hundreds of times.
Yeah, so I think that's what you're trying to get at is let's take a deep dive into the system, see the flaws in it, and how do we make it better?
Yep. We'll come back and wrap up the show next. It is, Jim. Steve Wilks and Ray Horton have joined Brian Flores in their lawsuit against the NFL, in which they've alleged that teams, you know, got racism in their hiring practices. We all know the story, well documented with Brian Flores and the Dolphins. Now Steve Wilks and Ray Horton have joined that fight, and a podcast interview resurfaced. Mina Kimes from ESPN. Mm-hmm. I guess this was, she brought to light an interview that was, did you say 2020 or 21? 2020 of Mike Mularkey talking about how he became the full-time Titans head coach.
Absolutely. So what he went on to say that the Titans informed him that he would be their new head coach, but they still had to interview individuals, more importantly minorities, because of the Rooney Rule. So with that being said, the interview was a sham, really. Hey, we're going to bring you in because we have to. And what he's saying is these guys are preparing themselves to be interviewed. They're doing their homework only to get in the room, at least in this case, only to get in the room knowing you have no chance at getting a job. So much so that they brought John Robinson in the room as well. And Mularkey's thinking like, why are you interviewing? I already had a job. Why are you interviewing me? Why are we doing this, going through this whole process if I already had a job? He says he regret it. And I know people will look at it and say, you know, listen, you only regret it because you're not here anymore. If he was a head coach, he more than likely wouldn't have said anything. You would hope he would, but more than likely he wouldn't have. But like I said, two things can happen at the same time. He can regret, you know, the way it all went down, but still wanted that job and coveted that job at being a head coach in the National Football League. There's only 32 of them.
I got a question for you, D-Mace, on this. I have heard a lot of coaches talk about this issue for years and years. Hey, the Rooney Rule exists. It's flawed. It's messed up. And there have been times where candidates like Ray Horton were in the same situation. Knew they weren't going to get the job, but they were invited to do the interview to satisfy the Rooney Rule. I want to ask you, if you were in that position and you kind of knew, because there have been some coaches that have said, look, do the interview anyway. Prepare like you're going to do the job and impress them in the interview, because that's still going to give you a better chance of getting it the next time. That's what you hear. But, man, that would be tough to go through, right? I just try to put myself in the shoes of a Ray Horton. You know you've got no shot. How can you really have your heart in it? So that's a tough dilemma. How would you feel if you were
in that
situation?
It is tough, and I would feel the same way that the other minority coaches feel. Like, I'm preparing to go into an interview. I'm doing everything that I need to do to go into this interview. And knowing in the back of my mind, I'm not getting it regardless.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this.
But I still would go.
When Matt LaFleur.
You would go.
Okay, let me tell you why you should go.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt LaFleur, when he interviewed for the head coaching job here, was he getting the job?
That was him and Vrabel, right? We don't know. I don't know. They had named Vrabel to coach. We don't know if he wasn't.
Was he getting the job?
I honestly can say I don't know.
Would John, you really think that they went into the interviews and they didn't know, you know, Mike Vrabel's going to be interviewing, Matt LaFleur, other, they weren't sure. But the interviews, it was Mike Vrabel that knocked their socks off, and that's the guy because of the interview? You don't think it was predetermined?
I honestly don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't.
You know who else interviewed for the job that same time? Steve Wilks.
Yeah. Matt LaFleur.
And he got the job. He got the job for Arizona. He did not get the Titans job. So that I remember that very clearly. The Titans interviewed three very impressive candidates. They got Mike Vrabel. They hired Matt LaFleur as the offensive coordinator. And then
from
Steve Wilks got the
interview.
Job.
I thought they were going to hire LaFleur because of his offensive knowledge. I thought they were going more so like everyone else was going. I'm going to go with the hot offensive guy to run my team.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Uh-huh. We all have our differing views on that. I believe that Mike Vrabel was getting the job because of his relationship with John Robinson. Okay. Mm-hmm. He was getting the job. Mm-hmm. But Matt LaFleur clearly knocked their socks off in that interview because he didn't get the head coaching job, but he did get the OC job. So there is a prime example of why you should do it anyway.
I'm
not so sure he gets hired as the OC.
But he doesn't. No. Here's the difference. He doesn't walk into the interview the same way Ray Horton walks into the interview.
I don't believe Matt LaFleur had a shot. I don't. That's me, though. You guys don't have to agree. That's fine.
No, you're right.
I didn't remember it that way. I thought he was a legit candidate because, remember, all the talk was the Rams offense. Wow, this Rams offense is amazing. You got to get some Rams people.
And the OC was just a title. He wasn't even running the offense.
But it's not who's running it. Who's the offensive coordinator?
Sean McVay.
Yeah, but he was behind. McVay, he was next in line to get a head coaching job, right or wrong?
I don't know.
LaFleur.
I don't know.
He was the next hot thing. It parlayed into
out of L.A. People are going, yeah, he's the O.C., but he's not the one running the show.
He had the title of O.C.
Okay, but people again,
why do you think they want minorities as titles of as O.C.?
Do you think because it served Eric Bieniemy well that Andy Reid runs the show? I mean, he's really the O.C.
Uh huh.
You think it served him well?
It hasn't.
Bienemy's the wink-wink the OC.
But it served LaFleur well.
Well,
agree.
Another part of this, too. Another part of this,
I don't know how. I mean, honestly, it could have hurt him, too.
I don't think it hurt him.
I just want to slip this in there, too. Another, I think, big facet is not just the hiring process. It's the quick hook with Wilkes and with Flores. Steve Wilkes gets hired, and 1 year later, after a bad year, he's out. I think that is part of this lawsuit, too, where you don't get any benefit of the doubt after you just got hired there. That's part of Wilkes's angle joining this lawsuit. I think that's something we should not have.
Well, the Rooney Rule is a sham.
Well, I was going to say that's in play, but you know what? Ken Wesenhunt had a quick hook here. Mike Mularkey had a quick hook on him too, and he just won a playoff game. So I don't know if that's.
But not after a year.
Ken Wesenhunt went a year and what?
Well,
a year and a half.
Mularkey was what?
Horrendous.
3 years. They were horrible. I mean, they were horrible. The way he ran up, the team was horrible. And even former players said he was horrible. Period.
It's closing time.
Yeah, it is.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Willie, enjoy the game. We'll see you tomorrow when you get back from Ottawa.
Bring us home a win.
Got it. See you tomorrow.
Everybody have a great rest of your Thursday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock so we can finish up the week. We'll see you then.